let's talk about modeling. Modeling is one of my favorite applications of neurolinguistic programming. Why? Because it's how all of NLP was created. And I think that this is the one piece of NLP that is undertaught in a lot of places, because there's modeling is for me everything that NLP is, and modeling for me is where NLP is going as we move into the future. Where are we taking it? What are we going to do with it? So when they created NLP, NLP was created by taking an existing concept. Taking an existing concept and then turning it back into a process. All of NLP was created through the process of denominalization. So, for example, you take an existing concept like rapport. Rapport was initially found by watching Milton Erickson. So Milton Erickson, when he described rapport, he said rapport is a magical, mystical state wherein the subject listens only to the sound of the operator's voice and responds only to the sound of the operator's voice. And Erickson said that anything is possible in the presence of a good rapport. But he never said how to do it. So Bandler and Grinder came in and they said, well, how do you do that? How do we take the process of rapport? And I think that's the most important question that we can ask in NLP is, how do you do that? So you look at some result that somebody's producing and they go, how do you do that? And so what they did in this case is they started to watch Milton Erickson. They began to watch videos of Erickson is where they really learned how he did rapport. And they noticed that every time he moved, or every time the client moved, he seemed to move as well. And then he would seem to move and the client would seem to follow. And then they began to watch interactions between people in general, and they noticed, huh, this is interesting. When one person moves, other people seem to move as well. And people do rapport naturally. You know, people are constantly matching and mirroring each other, whether they're conscious of it or not. So they said, well, how did we turn that back into a process that's something that somebody can do and produce that result by taking a specific order and sequence of steps? And they came up with the process of rapport. So that's the denominalization of that. Then they denominalized a lot of other things, like they denominalized the process of the magic in therapy. So they look at some magical result that somebody's looking at. Rapport is one example, but they look at the magical result that somebody produces in therapy, and they go, well, how do you do that? And how can we break it down in small enough chunks, orders and sequences of chunks, that we can then take that chunk and make a roadmap for somebody else to follow that same roadmap and end up producing the same result? And that's how everything in NLP was created. If you look at some of the advanced patterns of NLP, those were their attempt to show how the mind works while in hypnosis. If you look at submodalities and anchoring and things like that, that was their attempt to say, okay, well, how do you do that? How do you get to that end result, and how can we break that down in a conscious way that we can make transferable to somebody else? And they found that any result that an expert produces, we can break down and we can make it doable by somebody else if they've got the motivation, the desire to follow the steps required. One of the most famous modeling projects, of course, was the U.S. pistol shooting, the U.S. pistol shooter. So three or four NLP modelers went into the U.S. Army and said, hey, we can take your best pistol shooters and we can bring the rest of the pistol shooters up to the same degree of capability as the best ones in a short period of time. So U.S. Army said, okay. And they actually, they gave them a proposition that was hard to refuse. They said, if we aren't able to do it, we won't charge you anything. So U.S. Army was interested in this, and they said, sure, let's do it. So they went in and they modeled them, and they found certain things that the best pistol shooters did that the other ones didn't. For example, from a belief standpoint, the best pistol shooters had a belief that the sights on the gun were right on. That was a belief they had. Interestingly enough, when you talk to the people that were not good pistol shooters, they had a belief that the sights were off. Pretty interesting. They also found that the best pistol shooters made a picture in their mind prior to pulling the trigger of the bullet going right through the bullseye, right through the center of the target, whereas those that weren't great pistol shooters didn't do that. So now we're saying, okay, wow, there's certain things that are happening that are consistent with being really good versus not. And they found that if they elicited certain things from those pistol shooters, such as their strategies, so the strategies is the specific order and sequence of internal and external representations that lead to a specific outcome, so they could elicit the specific strategies that led to that. There were other things that were necessary to elicit as well, their beliefs about the gun, in this case the sights were on versus the sights being off. Their values were important, like why was it important for them to be good? So all of these things played into the mix. And what they found was that when they transferred that package of beliefs, values, strategies, and so on and so forth to the other pistol shooters, that they brought all of the pistol shooters up to the 90th percentile, and they cut the training times down into a third of the original training time. So they cut it down into just a few days, and everybody stepped up to the level of excellence of those that were great. So that was an effective modeling project in that case. Knowing that, we can go into any type of organization in NLP, and we can replicate excellence in terms of looking at their top producers, and we can bring the rest of the organization up to that level of excellence of the top producers, providing we have enough time, providing they let us go in and work with those top people, and providing the top people don't mind us asking questions like, slow down just a moment. What were you doing in your head just before that? You know, so you've got to have people that are patient with it. But there's phenomenal applications of this. In fact, a lot of people have gone into organizations and do nothing but modeling now. There's people from NLP that have gone out there and they say, well, hey, there's more money in the corporate world. Let's go in there and do corporate modeling projects. And they specialize in modeling. For me, modeling was really the next step in NLP. It was the first step that created NLP, but I went through NLP and I learned all these great tools. And the trail of techniques, remember, NLP is often described as an attitude of curiosity and wanton experimentation, a methodology, role modeling, that leaves behind a trail of techniques. The trail of techniques is traditionally what's taught as NLP, like when we teach you the satir categories, for instance, or when we teach you anchoring, or when we teach you rapport. Those are the techniques that came as a result of the modeling. So then we have to say, we can take the tools of modeling, we say, who do we want to model? Who is it that we want to be like or that we want to learn from? And we can replicate the promises of modeling is that we can replicate any form of excellence in a fraction of the time that it took the original expert to learn how to do the whatever it is that they're doing. Remember, Sir Isaac Newton said, the reason I see so far is because I stand on the tall shoulders of all those that came before me. Well, we're at a really exciting time in history where we have tools that just didn't exist before. Before the invention, and that's why I believe that this is the most important information on the planet. Because before NLP existed in the early 70s and up until now, and now it's evolved quite a bit, before the invention of NLP, we didn't have the tools to get in there and really replicate that excellence. People would do they would do unconscious modeling, where they just look at somebody. In fact, if you look at people who have really produced excellent results, they all had role models along the way. Elvis Presley went out and he was modeling the blues singers of the era. Then he went out and he found other models. Like for a long time he was modeling Roy Orbison and Roy Orbison's voice. Now oftentimes what happens is the person who role models somebody else steps up above the level of that individual. Why? Because they're standing on their tall shoulders and they're seeing further. If you look at Christina Aguilera was role modeling Mariah Carey, and you look and you say, wow, she's come some distance. Who was Madonna role modeling? I thought you would know that. Barbara Streisand, Judy Garland. So there's always, and what they'll do is they'll oftentimes, in true role modeling, is they'll take on that. Like a lot of people say, well, I don't want to emulate somebody exactly. But if you look at the people that are really outstanding and excellent in their field, they were the people that were emulating people exactly, and then they made it their own once they were able to do that. Give me, who are some of the people that you know about? Celine Dion modeled Barbara Streisand. Barbara Streisand and model Judy Garland. And it goes, and there's a chain of modeling. And what they'll tell you is if you look at Jim Carrey, when Jim Carrey was growing up, he used to model the great comedians of the time, and he'd say he'd just stay in his room, practicing in the mirror, emulating them exactly. They had them down to a science. So you look at Bill Gates. I mentioned earlier, Bill Gates read every book on Napoleon he could find. Bill Gates read every book on Napoleon he could find when he was growing up. When Rupert Murdoch was growing up, he had various models, people that he modeled along the way. So various newspaper barons. He was sent from Australia to go live in England for a while. And he went out and he found the most successful newspaper man in England at the time. And he took him on. And he wanted to learn every aspect of what that person was doing. And then he took his newfound knowledge and he went back to Australia and implemented exactly what he found there. I mentioned before, Richard Branson, when he launched Virgin Blue, He did that by modeling Southwest Air. And he took he looked at exactly what they did, and he replicated the system. And that's essentially what they do with every business that Richard Branson launches, and he's the head of over 200 organizations now, is they look at an existing model and they say, okay, how can we knock off that existing model and replicate it and move into that marketplace in a way that makes a difference, that champions the consumer? So he'll look at a fat marketplace where he says, oh, they've gotten a little fat, like you look at Coca-Cola or something like that. Yeah, they've gotten a little fat in terms of not taking care of the consumer, in terms of owning the marketplace. Let's go in there and compete and make a dent in their marketplace. And then what they do is they'll just go and knock off something exactly. And business owners know this when they go out and they say, what's a model that we can model ourselves on for the first 2 years and then for the first 3 years? And as we're moving forward, maybe we need to find a new model. Because sometimes if you take a leap too far in modeling, like if you model somebody that's too far ahead of you, they may be too far ahead of you in the evolution to model where they're at right now. So instead, you need to model where they've come from. Yeah, so you model where they are now, you model where they've come from, and you may find yourself in an in-between place, because you can replicate the excellence, but sometimes there's steps that you need to take to get there as well. But when you find their evolution, you can learn a whole lot of stuff if you're willing to step into the emulation phase, because you've got to step into that emulation phase. That's why sociologist Dr. Morris Massey says who we are today is to a large extent where we were when we were 10 years old. Who was it that we chose to model when we were 10 years old? Like for me, it was Spider-Man and Luke Skywalker. You know? Yeah. So I said, okay, I want to be a Jedi, you know? So the question is, who did you choose to model? Because that's and to a large extent, you did that consciously and unconsciously at that point. And so nowadays, as adults, sometimes we get lost with that. We stop modeling. But the fact is, we can look at an existing model and reproduce any result if we know what to look for in the model. If we know what are those components that really cause a model to produce results and to be a successful model. Yeah.